Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, our guest on the show is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Thanks so much for being with us. We did experience some technical difficulties with our live show today at noon, so we're re-recording with the mayor so we can still bring you an episode today. So you can't get in live questions, but remember that you can always keep emailing questions for Mayor Dennis or for any of our other four mayors to ask@wbaa.org. And we have the mayor on a telephone line. Good afternoon, Mayor.
This is so old school, isn't it?
I apologize again for the technical difficulties that we experienced today.
You know, but I'm kind of like, I've got the chocolate Midas when it comes to technology, so it could be me. And very easily. Buttons to me are meant to be pushed.
Uh-huh.
So maybe I just did something I shouldn't have done. I don't know.
We're going to figure it out. So now we are doing the show. Before we begin, I am tasked with passing along this message I just received from a listener, Alan. Alan writes, I want to commend the leaf vacuum crew for doing a great job this year getting rid of the piles of leaves we put at the curb.
Woo-hoo.
Kudos.
Yeah. That is the strangest piece of primitive technology that I've ever seen in my life. Have you ever seen the leaf vac truck?
I don't know if I have.
Man, there's an experience. That ought to be a circus ride. It's kind of an elephant.
Okay.
With wheels,
mm-hmm,
and an extremely large snout. I mean, they pull this thing, and it's just like the world's biggest vacuum cleaner, and it literally does just that. They pull it. The leaves are scraped to the curb. They go by, and they suck up everything on the curb. And when I say everything, I mean exactly that. They have had things go through that obviously it breaks the machine down, but it's amazing what people will, you know, hide under their leaves that we can pull up. But it is. It's one of those low-tech, high-appreciated piece of equipment that we have, and it does an amazing job. And our guys that run it, a little PR for my street and sanitation department, they do a great job too.
Well, I know I was talking with the mayor of Crawfordsville a couple weeks ago about their leaf vacuuming, and he was saying that people need to remember not to put things in the leaf pile that might create issues for the leaf, mm-hmm, vacuum. It just needs to be leaves, basically.
Yep. And unfortunately, you know, some people do. Tis the nature of the beast. They figure it out, this will work, and they throw it out there. We have not yet had a bowling ball, so that is not by any means meant to be a suggestion from anybody out there. But we've had basketballs, footballs, we've had small animals, we've had large animals, we've had trees, trunks, you name it. If it can go under a leaf, we've tried to suck it up.
So. Okay. You also, we will now transition into the show proper.
Wasn't part of the show?
It was, well, it is now part of the show.
It's part of history because we're recording this.
That is correct. Yeah. So you have the honor of being our first post-2020 general election Ask the Mayor guest. So where were you on election night? Where did you watch the returns come in?
I watched it from home in my own little house there at the top of the hill. Interesting things, huh? You know, maybe this is something that's going on now forever. We just have technical difficulties in all things that matter. We just stood by and kind of watched the slow trickle in from home.
Did you vote on Election Day, or did you vote early? Did you vote by mail? How did you vote this year?
I voted on the day before Election Day.
Okay.
Just got in there before. And there's a reason for that, obviously. You know, I think that I do appreciate the fact that we now have a longer span of time where we can vote.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost feel this little obligation to say thank you to the poll workers and things like that when I'm doing my voting. So I got in there a little early and did that just to say thanks to them and all that kind of stuff for having to man the place a little bit longer. But it really does take away, you know, excuses for not being able to vote. There's so many opportunities to get your vote cast, and it's such an important thing to do. And hopefully, and all indicators are that it has been a record-setting turnout. So that is awesome. That's great for our democracy.
I visited several voting centers on election day throughout the county, and the supervisors I talked to said everything had gone smoothly. And
they must not have a COMREX system, huh?
Correct. and for those places who had both early voting...
I'm sorry.
Hey, now. And for those places who had both early voting and election day voting, I was basically told that they felt like things were a bit more quiet on election day than they otherwise might have been, you know, on a big day with a presidential election, because so many people had already come in to cast a vote as part of that kind of early voting season. And from your perspective as mayor, how did the voting process unfold in West Lafayette?
Pretty much the same. And we have a lot of very, very politically active people in West Lafayette, whether it be through the university and our students to the citizens in West Lafayette. And they are actively engaged. You drive around, you see all the yard signs, you see all different kinds of things that are basically, you know, supportive of a candidate or so. But it really does just demonstrate the reality of the elective process. And we live in times now where there are some significantly bright lines between agendas with candidates. And there is no excuse in these days to not pick one. You know, there's no excuse not to participate. You know, some of the decisions that are being made at the state, local, and national level have long-term effects on our quality of life, on things that we do, on things that we don't do. You know, it has an impact on our schools. It has an impact on everything that we value, you know, as a free society. And to ignore your opportunity to participate is really bad form. So for here in West Lafayette, it was a very active period of time when the polls were open. And for an elected guy, that is exciting. That is one of the truest, bluest things that you can see. I mean, it really does prove that, you know, the country is moving in the right direction. And, you know, love or hate what's going on politically, if it encouraged this type of involvement and this type of participation, then it's a good thing.
How are you feeling about statewide and local results?
Okay. I don't know that the national results are they and the beginning that this is recorded.
They are unfolding. Well, we could be overtaken by events as we're talking right now.
Oh wow! How cool would that be to be interrupted with history? That'd be kind of neat.
Sure.
But I personally, I think that you know, that they will turn out the best way, and the best way is that the people will make choices, and those choices need to be supported. I obviously have, you know, friends and colleagues and coworkers and all that are running for office, and I'm not a real party person. I believe in picking the people, and hopefully the right people get chosen. I'm also one of those weirdos that think in some cases change is as good as arrest. So, you know, sometimes I think change can be good.
So I'll ask, too, since this has happened in other places, including, I believe, there was a protest in South Bend last night, just as the national results are kind of unfolding, we're waiting to find out what happens with that. There have been some protests, some gatherings. I mean, have you thought about that happening here? Have you prepared for the possibility that that's something that could happen in West Lafayette?
Yes, unfortunately, we have. I've spoken to both my fire chief and my police chief and didn't say, hey, heads up, better be ready. I mean, these guys are experienced professionals. They know exactly, you know, when there's the potential for something breaking bad, whether it be a home Purdue football game or, in this particular case, an election. So they're prepared. They know what to do. They know how to do it. They're both very experienced. They're both great leaders, and you know, we will do what we always do, and that's protect our community. The good bad news would be if something were to happen. You know, historically here in West Lafayette, and I'm including Purdue in that conversation. A lot of things that happen with the intent of communicating a message. The interest really isn't doing harm to people or property. It's just to make people aware of a particular perspective, and we respect that.
Okay. So let's talk about the other big issue that's ongoing that we've talked about a lot. So COVID-19 cases are on the rise in the county, in the state, and nationally.
Yeah.
We had a listener write in with a question earlier in October, almost a month ago. So I'm going to start with that question and let this listener ask this, which he directed to both yourself and to Mayor Tony Rusworski, who I'll be speaking with next week. He wrote, Governor Holcomb has more than once said localities can place more restrictions on their response to COVID-19 than what the state has put in place. Having seen Tippecanoe County's numbers go past 3,000 confirmed cases as of October 9th, again reminding you that this was sent earlier, what is the likelihood of more restrictions coming for Lafayette and West Lafayette? That's from Chris, who says he lives in Lafayette and works in West Lafayette. And since he wrote in with that question, as of today, the Indiana State Department of Health announced that we've hit 4,462 cases today statewide. That is a record. And 189 cases today in Tippecanoe County.
Also a record for
so,
a day.
Correct. And so he's asking, you know, about restrictions. You know, the health department, they put in place a county order that's prohibiting gathering sizes of more than 100 people without approval from them. They're asking people wear masks, socially distance, no matter what the gathering size is, which I think is possibly an even more important component of the order. That started yesterday. So that's we'll call that a restriction. And the governor has also continued to stress personal responsibility over reinstating restrictions. So do we need both? You know, or is there the possibility for restrictions? You know, the numbers are obviously continuing to go up and up. You know, how does this stop?
Well, we hear, because you know that I did one of the first mask mandates in the state that actually had a punitive measure to it. It's not just I say so, so do what I say. It's do it this way or else you have the potential to get a ticket that could cost you $100 or up to $300. So it's got some oomph in it. I think that there is some degree, you know, we've talked about, you know, COVID exhaustion. People are just tired of dealing with it. They're tired of the restrictions. They're tired of everything. And that applies to those that are responsible for creating those restrictions and inhibitions and requirements. I think that there is a level of, oh, geez, here we go again, on the part of some of the leadership throughout the state of Indiana from the top down. And I think that there's a belief system that the eventuality is that there will be either a vaccine or that this virus will exhaust itself or that people will be more inclined to take their own personal protections. And there's a part of me that says, yep, that's a possibility. But the other part of me knows, and this is probably more from my enforcement experience as a police officer, sometimes people will choose the path of least resistance. And that can in some cases mean having a more relaxed approach to treating the potential exposure to the virus. So, you know, we don't really need that. I mean, we really have to be careful because if the numbers get to a point where we have to start closing things down, nobody wants that. You know, there's a very delicate balance between what's best for our health and what's best for our economy, because it's, in some cases they can be supportive of each other, and in some cases they can be detractors from each other, and it's a really tough balancing act. Personally, in my community, I'm the mayor of a college town. You know, I've got a really big university in my city, and that means that there's a lot of folks between those experimental ages of 18 and say 26. And they're inclined to make great decisions when they're being supervised, and then sometimes when left alone, they don't make such great decisions. And we've been exposed to that. We've been exposed to having parties off campus that are just exactly what you're not supposed to be doing times 10. We've had people who are choosing to have a new, you know, political position on masks to where they vehemently oppose wearing them, and they do it in such a way that it's self-righteous and they're trying to make a point about how they disagree with too much governmental intervention on their personal choices. And all that leads up to the same thing. What the hell are you thinking, basically? You know, one thing we know for sure is that this virus isn't any fun to get. And to some people, it can be not only not fun, but it can be lethal. And we need to be responsible to that. The other thing is that it has a sort of a collateral effect on things. It can close businesses because of having an exposure in a business and the requirement to decon the business. It can shut down events like sporting events, again, because of the potential for the spread. So it makes sense to me to maintain some level of control over social gatherings, some level of control over business hours, some level of control over making sure that the virus doesn't spread to the point where we got to lock everything down. Now, having said that, my authority doesn't supersede the governor's. I've got to be cautious about what, you know, I know Eric, Governor Holcomb, he's a friend, we talk. I respect his position on this. But I do think that thinking that people know what to do and will voluntarily choose to do the right thing, there has to be a limit to that. I mean, we have to say, okay, we'll give you up to this number of positive tests, or we'll give you up to this, you know, time period to have some significant declines in the numbers of conversions. And if we don't get to that, if we don't reach either that positive or if we reach that negative, you know, metric too quickly, then we need to take a little bit more assertive action in trying to get these things under control. This will eventually go away, whether it be through a being able to get a shot or through the process of just it becoming the virus weakening. But until we get a vaccine that's tested and proven to be safe, or until it reaches that threshold to where the numbers are just by the fact that the virus is degrading each time, I think that we're going to be sort of leadership is going to be required to make some tough decisions. And I, for one, have no problem doing that.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. We're talking right now with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. So you just kind of referenced this, and this came up at yesterday's Health Department press briefing. You know, we talked about how the last several weeks, or let's even say weekends, have gone with relation to students and gatherings for football games and breakfast club. And and as Purdue President Mitch Daniels said in a video address, and you also referenced this yesterday, the weekend of the Iowa football game was not the finest hour. You mentioned something. You had mentioned something about, and you were just saying this, neighborhood patrols. You said something yesterday about people separating when they see there's an authority figure in the area, then they get back together as that authority is going around the corner. Can you talk a little bit about that? What's an example of that, I guess? How pervasive is that specific issue?
It's almost like playground mentality. When we're all little kids, you know, we all had access to an outdoor playground. And when the parents were gone, you know, you would push the swings too high. You would jump up and down on the teeter-totter. And some people in the listening world out there might not know what those things are, you know, because I don't know if we have them
around
anymore.
Who wouldn't know what a teeter-totter was?
It's just people get that way. They forget about some of the fun stuff that we had.
Okay.
But, I mean, you behave irresponsibly because nobody's watching. But as soon as somebody's around, you know, you're minding your P's and Q's and things go well. The same thing happens in any kind of environment where there's an enforcement mechanism that is not connected to that particular activity. Hypothetically, you know, there is a direct and proportionate relationship to people obeying the speed limit when there's a police car around. People look at the speedometer and they look at the sign and they stay right there or a little bit under. But as soon as either they are past the police officer, if he's doing a static patrol, or he's going the other way and he's out of sight, then you get back to normal habits. The same thing is happening with COVID. You know, we know that there are certain behaviors that can be destructive, can be, you know, hazardous to our health. And one of them is large gatherings with people that aren't, you know, keeping their distance and wearing the protective, you know, attire that's been required. So when people see us, for instance, if our police officers are doing their routine patrol through the neighborhoods and specifically in the near campus neighborhoods, and people see a police car, they go inside. And we have no way of knowing what's going on. And then as soon as they see the taillights going down the road, they come back out. Same thing with people on porches. You know, when they're just having a small gathering, they might not be wearing masks. They might be hanging around on the porch. They see a squad car, they go inside, or they do something to mask their behavior, then no pun intended. Mm-hmm. And then when the police car leaves, they go back to normal. So it's that observed and observing environment to where people realize there's the potential for getting called out for something they're doing that they know is wrong. The other thing is that law enforcement themselves fall under that same category. And again, this goes back to my old days when I was doing it for a living. you have a tendency to think that because you're in an enforcement position that the rules don't necessarily apply sometimes. And we have to remind our patrolmen and our police officers, our firefighters, and our employees here in the city that they are leading by example. So when they're in an environment where they have the potential to expose or be exposed to, put your masks on. And that environment I definitely do control. That one's not a visibility thing. If I'm not around, that doesn't give them any excuse not to behave that way. And the other side of it is that when people see us doing it, whether they be on the back of a, you know, be in a squad car or doing anything, then I think that's a good example for the public to realize that we're in here too, working together.
Have you had to remind people to do that?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of activities where you're getting in and out of the car. You know, let's say hypothetically people that read meters or people that do sewer work or different things where they might be in an environment where they're switching in and out of going from inside of a vehicle, outside of a vehicle, inside of a vehicle. You know, they sometimes forget. And people watch. If people are wearing a uniform or if they have, you know, the city symbol on their shirt, people will call and say, hey, you know, you had a guy, he was in my backyard checking a meter and he didn't have his mask on. And we respond to that. The other thing is that specifically, in some of the other operations, like when you're working on the back of a garbage truck, sometimes, you know, because of the nature of the work, keeping a mask on is somewhat of a challenge. So sometimes they'll drop off in the air when they're in the middle of lifting something up or they're trying to work a part of the truck or something to that effect. And there's the accidental noncompliance, or it comes off, you stick it in your pocket until you finish what you're doing, then you put it back on. So that's one of those human things that happen too. And again, all we do is make sure that department heads who are responsible for these folks make those folks aware that, you know, there is a mask mandate. And if they are going to be in proximity to people, that they need to make sure they keep their masks on. And here, at least, it seems to be working very well. Now, the other side of that is things that we don't control. There are certain circumstances, whether it be through, a doctor's order or something to that effect, where people have issues with wearing masks. They feel it actually causes them, you know, it challenges their ability to comfortably breathe. We respect that. But, you know, again, if we're not in a position to know, we'll probably drive by and make the suggestion. And if they give us a great explanation, we'll go ahead and abide by it. But generally speaking, you know, here, you know, masks are no longer, something new. It's not something that we're not overtly familiar with. And when we're dealing with a virus that we know can be transmitted through casual contact, unprotected casual contact, wearing a mask isn't that big of a deal. And now, you know, the masks are being somewhat politicized. You know, there's a lot of neat looking masks out there that can communicate all kinds of messages. So, you know, I don't want to make light of the whole, you know, pandemic, but as always, you know, by nature, humans are generally blessed with a good sense of humor, and I'm seeing some pretty comical things on people's faces these days.
So I'm going to circle back for a second to the football, weekend football game phenomenon. So we had a home game followed by an away game. Do you see a significant difference in activity or what needed to be policed or enforced mm-hmm. between those two weekends?
Yeah, the obvious. I mean, obviously our downtown mm-hmm. wasn't nearly as active as it is during a home game. But the challenge that we have with away games is people choosing to watch them at some friend's house mm-hmm. and then having mass gatherings at friend's house. And yes, we did have a few events at that level happen. The good bad news about that is that the neighbors don't like it. They don't want to put themselves at risk, so they call and let us know, and then we go ahead and break the parties up. And really, our police officers are pretty amazing when it comes to handling that tactfully. You know, I mean, if all the other stuff is okay, there's nobody underage, there's nobody extremely intoxicated, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Our officers just generally remind them that, hey, you know, there's a rule out there now that you guys have to wear masks. And generally speaking, and again, generally speaking, while they're there, people are willing to comply. Because the good bad news of that, and I happen to be using that a lot today because I guess that's one way I don't have to contradict myself, but the positive of that is that, you know, they do put the masks on. The negative, basically what we don't know is how long they stay on after we leave. But there's only so much we can do. You know, this is one of those things where people have to take personal responsibility for it. You know, one thing we know for sure, if you get it, it's awful. I mean, it's no fun to have to deal with. And so we are trying to, as you know, as much as we can here as local government in West Lafayette and in cooperation with Purdue, make sure that everybody understands that's what we're here to try and do now, is make sure that everybody is safe and that everybody goes home for Christmas healthy and happy. You know, the students themselves, and I've talked about this even on national radio. I did a story with the New Yorker magazine last week, and I did one for, have you heard of Cheddar? It's a news service.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think they, you know, had the video screens at the gas stations or something. But I did both of those, and they inquired about our mask program. And they inquired about, you know, the logic behind it and what the hope, the end result was. And it pretty much is an example that other university communities are looking to see how it works for us. And I've got a lot of phone calls from a lot of local or, you know, college community mayors asking about how that's going. And, you know, to all of them, I tell them the same thing. It's going as better than we expected, but it's not perfect.
So I'm going to ask about this. The other side of the conversation right now is that the health department is saying there's a higher proportion of county cases that are not in the Purdue community. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about the impact that the Purdue community has and will continue to have on COVID numbers in the area. And obviously, we'll continue to talk about that. But now that cases are going up and we're seeing the spread of the virus in the broader community, are we deflecting a little bit when we only talk about the gatherings students are having? Because adults are also getting together to watch the football game, attend gatherings. And so I think it's important to acknowledge, especially since the health department is kind of pointing out, again, that proportion of cases, you know, that it's not just a Purdue issue, that people can't tell themselves that's where the numbers are coming from.
Yeah, but, you know, here's one of the things that at least is something that I've experienced. I'm generally known as the mayor of Purdue students, the mayor of Purdue. So they ask me about students, and I generally discuss student behavior, which is now ending on a positive note, because they are. They're getting it, and they're abiding, and things are going well. My non-student population has always been compliant. You know, the citizens of West Lafayette generally abide by the rules. I get a few folks that are rebellious about it. But, you know, whether it be a speed limit, whether it be, you know, a road closure, whether it be some of the basic tenets that local government does on any given day of the week to ensure public safety or to get a project done, the West Lafayette citizens generally are pretty compliant. And the good news is about the Purdue Pledge, that's ensured that there's a level of compliance on the part of Purdue students as well. So I feel pretty good about what the city of West Lafayette and Purdue University have been able to do.
That is our time for today. Mayor Dennis, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. As always, send us your questions to ask@WBAA.org. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great rest of the day.